do appreciate you coming back. And I can tell you, the after lunch sessions are always a little bit more difficult because we all are just kind of settled in a little bit more. We've got the food. So we'll try to keep your attention going with both of these lessons. And I think they're valuable for a couple of different reasons. The last lesson you'll see when we get to that. But this one's just the other side, the flip side of the one that we looked at in the last session, which was, what does she want from me anyway? And this one's called, what does he need now? And it's approached differently because the most common reference by women to men is, in regards to most common negative toward men, is that they are so needy. And so that's why this lesson is titled this way. We see that differently. You know, you talk about men and women being sick at home or whatever. How drastically different is that normally? You hear wives talking about how the men whine and, you know, how they need this taken care of or that taken care of for them. We seem to be less good at being patients than the women do. And so we think in those kind of terms, that men are just a little bit more needy. And so obviously both, as we mentioned last time, both are trying to understand, how do I fulfill the needs? Because that's the key. The wife's job is to fulfill the need of her husband. The husband's job is to fulfill the need. And that's why God created marriage. When he said it's not good for man to be alone, and so he created for him a helper that was suitable, a help meet, a completion to the picture. There's something that man can provide to the woman in the relationship that on her own completely may not be as full as God would intend or like it to be, and vice versa. So he can use this relationship to help both of them become complete people and be very full in their lives for him. And that's the goal we want to talk about. It isn't just how can he make her or help her to become a better woman, or how can she help him become a better man, but how does her fulfillment of his needs help him become more godly? And how does the fulfillment of him toward her needs help her become more godly? Because that's the goal. Use your husband or use your wife to become a better servant of God. And we do that by demonstrating what this whole marriage thing is about. As we mentioned in the very first session, I think that is still the key. There will be people. You will come across somebody most likely in your life that will be influenced as to what they feel about God and his relationship with his people based on how they view your family or your relationship with your spouse and even with your children. And I know that's true because, as I mentioned, that is the very reason that I stand before you today. I was not a Christian prior to that time, and it so drastically affected my life. So I'm telling you, there are people out there that are looking, and we can show them what it means to have this. I've got to participate in a funeral right after I get back to Kansas City. We had a lady who just passed away there, but I've used them in numerous marriage seminars. It's an older couple there, Eugene and Orvita Compton. And matter of fact, they're from Baytown and moved to Kansas City years ago. But I use them as a reference because one of the greatest things I could do is they, in our building, they sit like right over here up front. And I could just point and I say, if you think marriage, God's plan for marriage isn't effective and doesn't work and doesn't influence lives, let me just ask you to look at this couple over here. They've been married 72 years. She just passed away, but 72 years. I'm telling you, God has devised a fabulous plan by joining man and woman together in marriage, and we can make it work, and we can show the world that God's plan works and is a glorious thing. And that's what we need to strive to do. It isn't just for us. How can I really show God how much I appreciate him and show others how much I appreciate him by what I do with my marriage? All right. We're going to find that this one goes a little more quickly than the other, and there's a reason for that, because what women are going to find is that husbands are driven to achieve simplicity. Not highly complicated in that sense. That they look for ways to simplify life. I mentioned that there's that book written that's called Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti, and I use that conversation where it talks about the idea of the woman just seems to go off on tangents. The way he describes that, he says, I want you to picture, if you would, in your mind, a plate of spaghetti. And he said, and pick a noodle with your eyes. Pick the end of one noodle. And he says, and try to follow that to the other end of that same noodle with your eyes. He says, I'm telling you, you will seamlessly switch from noodle to noodle without even realizing you're doing it. And he says, and that's the way that a woman processes information. Every idea and every thought is connected to every other idea and every other thought. She processes information in that way. I talk about this frequently with Judy. We'll be driving. She starts the first conversation of a day with a pronoun. And I tell her, you can't do that. She says, you remember when she said, and I'm thinking, who is she? You can't start a conversation with a pronoun. There has to be somebody to tie that to. And she said, well, don't you remember? She says, Tuesday we were talking about such and such. I'm thinking, are you kidding? Tuesday? This is Thursday. Tuesday and Thursday aren't tied together for me, but they were for her. It was as if the conversation had ended on Tuesday and just picked right up where it had left off, because all the I had said something that stimulated that, but I was talking about something entirely different. It all ties together. Men are like waffles, and women need to understand that. It's like looking down at a waffle. Men process. It's called compartmentalizing by the social scientists. Men compartmentalize things. They put it in little tiny boxes. So it's like you're looking down at a waffle, and you've got this whole idea of being compartmentalized. And we see things one at a time. If a man's in the TV, watching TV box, he's in the watching TV box. And it isn't that he's intentionally ignoring his spouse. She needs to understand you've got to divert his attention from the box he's in into the box you're in first, before you actually have the attention. So it's possible that you talk to him and he processes that way. If he's working on the car, he's on the working on the car box. A man has a box for, and that's because in the simplicity it allows him to be able to deal with and to solve issues one at a time. And that's the way he processes information. And men have a box that has nothing in it. Women don't understand that. She says, what are you thinking about? And he says, nothing. She thinks he's lying. I'm telling you, he's not. He's thinking about nothing. He has a. That's his method of downtime or escape. He can go into a box where he's not really processing information at all. It is a nothing box. He has a tendency, when he gets asked that, because he thinks his wife's not going to believe him, he looks for the box of closest proximity that he might be able to jump into so he can at least tell her. But he has a box. There's just a point at which a man uses that as a downtime. That's the way he processes so he can get back into solution mode. He goes into, it's almost like a, you know, vegetative state. He can not process anything temporarily. And so when you ask him, what is he doing? So it is important for wives to understand how he's processing information, because there's a reason that men don't want to have conversations with their wives. And I don't mean at all. I'm just saying there's a reason that they're afraid of conversations. Why do you think men are afraid of conversations with their wives? There's two things that cause this. She's going to find out I'm not perfect. And fortunately, Judy hasn't found that out yet, so I appreciate you bringing that up. But no, she is going to see. I mean, she's going to see my flaws. You know, that's part of the reason of marriage. If there was no such thing as marriage, men would go through life thinking they were perfect. No. All right. That's one of the things here. She says it's going to open the door for all these other things. It's like a journey on a train. Men are afraid of taking this journey because, one, nobody's given them the destination yet. They don't know where it's going to go. And so it may open up multiple things to him, and he's not ready to do that. Secondly, he doesn't know when it's going to end. Nobody told him how long the journey is. And so he would rather have an end. So if women are going to be dealing with men, and by way of conversation, it's important for them to understand you're going to have to stay inside of a box and process information, because men are driven to simplicity. And you've got to understand that. If you're going to open up multiple things, he's going to be much more hesitant to get into that conversation with you. Now, in Ephesians chapter 5, in this idea of simplicity, it's interesting because wives are told two different things by way of commands to God, or by God. He's going to give motivation for those things, but really only tells her two things that she has to do. He starts off in verse 22 by telling her what? That she has to submit. And we're obviously in a culture that balks at that idea right to start with. But the godly wife are told, submit to your husbands. That's a word in the Greek that means to line up under. It isn't an equality issue. I understand some men abuse this concept, and it doesn't say husbands submit your wives. You can't do that. Submitting is a willful yielding of oneself to someone. And so you can't do that to somebody. You can force somebody into obedience by sheer force. We understand that. That may be possible, but you can't submit somebody. Somebody has to submit themselves. It means to line up under. It's almost like a military rank. It doesn't have anything to do with equality. Later, or in other places, God says in Galatians what? We already looked in 1 Peter. He said, live with your wives with understanding. She's a fellow heir. Just like you're an heir in the throne of God, she's an heir of God as well. Equal that way. In Galatians, Paul told the Galatians what? There's no male, there's no female. Before God, there is equal standing. That's not the issue at all. Role relationship, he says, is different than that. Nobody, when you read John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Nobody would deny that. After reading that, it would be foolish to deny that Jesus was equally God with God the Father. Same deity. It's not like he's less of a deity than the Father is. In the beginning was the Word was with God and was God. That's an equal deity. But you read a passage like in 1 Corinthians 11, and it says what? It says man's the head of woman, but he starts that conversation by saying what? What's that? Christ is the head of the church, or Christ is the head of man, he says in that particular verse. And God's the head of Christ. They're equal as far as deity is concerned, but they do not have the same role. That's what they're saying. And so he's trying to get women to understand you've got a different role relationship. And we're in a society that balks against that. We understand that. That we somehow think that submission means inequality, but it doesn't. God is saying in order for a unit to function, whether it's a military unit, which is what this word really is in the Greek, it's a word that means that, like in a military, line up under a rank issue. He says, in order for the military to function, somebody has to be in the position of head and somebody has to be in the position of under them for that to work. Would you agree with that? When I had a design business in Florida. I used to do mechanical engineering and design, architectural, that kind of stuff before I was preaching. And had a business in Florida. And my brother, who's a CPA in Florida, when we were getting ready to start this company, me and another guy, he said, let me give you one piece of advice, because we were creating a partnership, not a corporation at that time. He said, do not create a 50-50 partnership, period. He said, somebody has to have an ability to deal with when there is a conflict. Somebody has to eventually have a say that will make a determination. And so whether you believe that in business or not, God has said units that are structured like families, there are heads and there are those that are not heads. It isn't an equality, it's a submission for it to function. The same way as he uses that reference, head and body. Well, if my hand wants to do something that my head doesn't want my hand to do, that's when we would call it dysfunctional, would we not? But if my hand does exactly what my head tells it to do, then we would say that's functional of the body. God expects the same thing in a marriage. And so he says, wives, submit to your husbands. And secondly, he says, wives, respect your husbands. That's what he says at the end of the chapter. Nevertheless, let each one of you, in verse 33, in particular, so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Now here's what's interesting about that. I would ask you, what kind of love is the husband supposed to give to the wife? Like Christ loved the church. And so what, if we're going to look for one word to describe that, what kind of one word description might we give it? And there's several. Sacrificial is one of those we talked about. Unconditional. And that's the one I want to focus on. Here's what's interesting. We have a tendency to think in terms of that love should be unconditional. And that's true, is it not? My love for my wife or my children or even my enemies is not based on what they do. Would you agree with that? God expects me to love because of who I am as his child, period. It's unconditional. The same way God loves me. His love is unconditional. His love is, right? Respect has to be what? See, so if somebody said, fill this blank in, respect has to be, we say, earned. Is that right? What's the command say? Wives, respect your husbands if... See, we don't talk in terms of unconditional respect. And I think that's what God is commanding of women. And I think we miss that point sometimes. That doesn't mean you have to like what he does. I love my wife. I don't even have to love the things that she does. She could say something that was very cruel to me, and God's not saying, Mark, I think you should just love that she said that to you. But he's saying, you love your wife, even though we may not agree with something that they have done. I think respect is the same way, and we need to think in terms of unconditional respect. When I lived in Florida, I'm a military brat. Never was in the military myself, but I'm one of those military brats, and I was a child of an officer. So that gave us special privileges when we would go on the Air Force base out at MacDill in Tampa. And as we would go on, that was back in the days when you didn't have to stop at the gate, you didn't have to go through all the security and everything else, because they had a little sticker that was on the front bumper of your car. And that sticker would let them know they could wave you through, but it also let them know something else. It let them know if the car was the car of an officer or the car of an enlisted man. Because you had an enlisted man who was always the one at the gate, and it was normally an airman at MacDill Air Force Base. And so I'm a 16-year-old kid, and as I'm pulling through the gate, I've got a car that's got a sticker on it that says that this is an officer's car. So I'm, as a 16-year-old kid, I'm driving through, and this is what I get. The guy at the gate snaps to attention and holds that salute until I get through, and then he snaps off that salute. Why? Because I was worthy of respect? No, because I was driving the car of an officer, and that he respected the rank of the officer. Now, as a 16-year-old kid, I'd snap to a salute, and I'd salute him back, and I assure you, there was things he wanted to do other than salute me, guaranteed. But he showed respect. There have been presidents that I have both liked and not liked since I have been of voting age. But I would hope that this is true. I would hope that if any president walked into my presence, wherever I was, that I would demonstrate respect for the office, regardless of how much in disagreement I was with him and his policy. I might hope that he would give me a chance to talk to him and explain to him why I thought his policy was so flawed. But if he's the President of the United States, because he's the President of the United States, the office carries a certain amount of respect with it. And we need to demonstrate that. And I think he's saying to women, unconditional respect for your husbands. He doesn't need to earn that. You need to demonstrate that to him. Because why? We said women's most pervasive need is love. Men's most pervasive need is respect. God has created us that way. I think that's why God put us in the position of the search and conquer mentality. Because he is the provider, and that's the way God created that, and God intended him to be the head, he needs to understand that he is successful in that role, and that is demonstrated through respect. So how does she demonstrate respect for her husband? That's what we want to talk about. What is it that he needs? And there's just three questions that we're going to answer. I think men ask these questions in order to keep life as simple as it can possibly be. This is just, and if you fulfill him in these areas, I think a man will feel very complete. It's just, how do we accomplish that? First, is life with you going to be an expression of confidence? Are wives confident in their husband? Are they trying to demonstrate to him how much they appreciate who he is and what it is that he's seeking to do? And that shows up in different areas. One, you need to appreciate his desire to achieve or his desire to work. Let me ask a woman, any woman in here, whether wife or not. You meet another woman for the first time, and you girls are going to be in a conversation. What's probably one of the first questions you might ask, especially if you're married? What's that? What's your husband do? I think most women would ask another question before that, though, if they're just talking amongst women. What's that? What do you do? I think that a lot of women, I mean, and maybe I'm wrong. So tell me, I'm saying most women's conversations do not generally gravitate toward what you do first, and especially the longer you've been married. If you're, let me just say, two mothers meet each other, what do you think the first thing they talk about is?
Kids.
Their kids. Why? Because women are very relationship oriented. And so even if they don't know if the other one has children, they might ask that question. Do you have any children? That's a question very quickly to come up in women's conversations. How old are your children? They might start asking questions about their children. Are you married? They might talk about that. Things center around relationships. I can tell you, almost invariably, two guys start conversations with what question? What's that? What do you do? Where do you work? What kind? Men's lives center around their work, at least to some degree. It's one of the reasons that many men struggle so hard with retirement. They lose a sense of their identity. Why? Because God created them to be the one who was the achiever, the worker. That we're not talking about whether or not women can work. That's not the issue of this class at all. The idea is here that God created men to be the provider for the family, to be the head of the family, and he ties his identity directly to that. And that becomes very critical. We need to understand that that's very important to him. Here's a scenario. Man comes home. And he says, wife says, how was the day? Normally he says, fine. But this day he says, not a good day. Got laid off. Lost my job today. She responds, that's okay, honey. We have each other. And nothing else really matters. Now that sounds like a wonderfully loving thing to say, doesn't it? Well, I can tell you, most men don't react well to that statement. She thinks she has expressed this great love. You know what? Don't be concerned about that. That doesn't really mean anything. We've got each other. His way of thinking is, what do you mean it doesn't mean anything? It's my job. It's my ability to provide for my family. It is my identity. Absolutely. And so for a wife to say, now she doesn't mean that. The wife is not saying, your job doesn't matter. Are you, women? If you were to say that to your husband, would that be your intent? Your job doesn't matter? No, she thinks she's expressing love. Why? Why is she expressing love? She thinks relationally. That is absolutely true. And so, and what was the other answer I heard? I think I heard another one that was good too. Because that's her need. Absolutely. That's what she would be looking for is love. If something had happened difficult in her life, she would be looking for an expression of love. She's demonstrating love. He's looking for respect. And so, she needs to understand you can't just treat his ability to work or his desire to work as if it doesn't matter. Always express confidence and show that you really appreciate his desire to work. Secondly, his desire to provide and protect. Both of those go there. You need to do that. Show him that you appreciate that. How do you do that? How do you appreciate that? How do you demonstrate appreciation? What's that? Yeah, that's a great way. A good steward of the resources, showing that I'm not wasteful. I understand how hard you work for what we have. And so she shows good stewardship at home. Frivolous spending causes a husband to feel disrespected. Other things that she might do. What's one of the ways? Go ahead, Ross.
I appreciate it when Laura teaches the kids by my example. You can see what your father's done here.
Absolutely. If he's needing to understand he's successful and his desire is to be the lead in the family, and somebody points to him as the lead in the family and says, there you go, that's what I'm talking about. That, see what your father's doing, that's what you need to do. You demonstrate that the same way as a woman would have love demonstrated to her, through love as well as that, I mean through words as well as actions. And pointing that out, telling him how much you appreciate that, showing him that through your actions. Thirdly, you need to appreciate his desire to lead. That's the concept of submission. I want to look to his leadership as a wife is what you ought to think. Understand that God created the design of marriage for a reason. How do I look to yield to Him? How do I look to express that to Him? Understanding the glory that it brings to God, to acknowledge that He is in the position of lead, and I need to follow Him because He's in the position to lead. And so how might you demonstrate how much you appreciate that He is the leader of the home? What's that? Absolutely. We've got a whole lesson in one of our retreats that we do that are called Men Who Won't Lead, Women Who Won't Follow. Both are a travesty to marriage. God wants the men to lead. God wants the women to follow. And you need both of those. So following, stepping in line is a good way of showing that. How else? How might you not do that? Where do you think men's biggest complaints as to struggles they have with the wives? They fall into like what kind of categories? Questioning his decisions. It doesn't mean I can't ever do that, but if you're constantly questioning his decisions, then he's going to feel very disrespected in that. I don't think most men would mind if you occasionally question. Yes?
Just a point on that. You talk about growing up in a military family. So in the military, you have the enlisted and the officer, and one is the leader. And the senior enlisted guy is no less of a leader than the officer in charge. However, when it comes to questioning the orders, if he has any question, he'll do it when no one else can see. It's between him and his boss. So that way, when they leave, they go out in front of all their troops. They're saying the same things. They're acting as if they both are doing the same thing.
I think that is an absolute key. You've got to understand how critical it is to show a united front. It doesn't mean you can't ever question, you can't ever have any discussions about that. I've got a couple that I was counseling with that lived in out of our area. And one of the children wanted to do something. And the mother thought it would probably be okay. The father thought it would not. So they decided that they were not going to let the child do it. Here's the way the mother broke the news to her. Says, I'm okay with this, but your father does not think this is a good idea, so we're not going to let you do that. That's great followship, isn't it? That's all she said was, I wouldn't follow him, but you're going to have to. She should have had whatever discussion with her husband, but gone back and said to the child, we or your father has decided, and this is what we're going to do. You provide that united front so that they understand that there is a clear, definite leadership in that arrangement. You've got to appreciate his desire to lead that way. Also, appreciate his desire to analyze and counsel. This is a tough one. I got to tell you, this is a tough one. Because men approach conversation differently than women. A lot differently. I've never gone to one of my guy friends and said, hey, you want to just talk? I mean, what would he think? If guys talk, why do guys talk? Why do guys have a conversation? There you go. It's to solve problems. There's some kind of purpose involved in it. Maybe there's a question to be answered. I told you I'm not much of a phone guy. I've got a good friend who's an attorney that's at our congregation. He will call me occasionally. We don't even say goodbye. We know if the conversation's over. He'll call and ask me a question. I'll answer the question. We hang up. It just, I knew that's what he called for, and so we're done. He didn't call just to chit-chat about things. We approach the conversation differently than that. Men, when the wife says, can we talk? Here's what the man hears. Houston, we have a problem. Otherwise, why would you want to talk? And so, whatever it is, he's going to seek to analyze and solve whatever it is she addresses. Women, is that right? Does that happen? I can tell you, it took me a long time to learn, once we were married and had children at home, and Judy's watching three toddlers at home at one time, and you're having those kind of days that the men have no clue. They can't even imagine how you could possibly think your day was difficult when all you did was have three kids at home and really didn't have to do anything. I understand you did have to do, please don't get me wrong. I'm saying that's the man's comprehension of that. So I would come home and Judy would say, I always noticed we had three children until they misbehaved, then I had three. And so I would come home and she'd say, you know what your son did today? And so she might tell me, and what do you think my response was? I would say, you know what, here's what you should have said. Here's what you should have done. And she was just wonderfully thankful that I had given her that advice, don't you think? No. She wasn't seeking advice. She was seeking the connection and the comfort. I'd have been a lot better off by just shaking my head and acknowledging what a miserable day she had. Uh-huh. Are two of the best words you can ever learn as a man. Just acknowledge. But knowing that women... That men perceive conversation that way, you need to let him analyze and counsel sometimes. Don't constantly say, that's not what I wanted. If you just want to bend his ear, tell him that ahead of time. I'm not looking for any solution. I just want to vent. Then he can be at ease. He can say, okay, I'm all right now. He can just sit back and listen. But he thinks if you're bringing something up, you're bringing it up for solution, because that's the way God built us. We're seeking solution. We seek to conquer the problem that's in front of us. When men are driving and they see a car up ahead of them, it doesn't take long before he starts thinking, I can pass that guy. Why? because he's there. I can pass in. And so it just becomes a conquer mentality. Anything to achieve. Appreciate his desire to accomplish those things. And so you're going to have to let him analyze. You're going to have to let him counsel sometimes. You're going to have to understand that he processes differently. He thinks differently than you do. And so you're going to express that confidence to him in different ways. And let me give you one other suggestion. Understand the simple nature with which he approaches the solution of all things. We are not mind readers. Women ask questions when they ought to be making statements. Does that make sense? Let me give you an example. Women will ask questions such as, if you walk in the bedroom and your wife says, "Are those your socks on the floor?" Now, I have to tell you, my first thought is, if they're not my socks, we got a lot more to talk about than what we think we do. If you want me to pick up my socks, tell me to pick up my socks. I don't understand what the question is for. Men are simpler. Tell us what you feel. Doesn't mean we'll react to it. Doesn't mean we'll do it, but we'll at least understand it. We need to make sure that we're approaching that with simplicity. He feels much more respected if you just tell him what it is you're looking for him to do. And so how are you going to express that to him? You women ever send your men cards? Or give them birthday cards or Christmas cards or any of the other things that help keep Hallmark in business? Do you give them cards? Somebody tell me how you normally sign your card to your husband. Anybody, just give me how you sign it, if you're not too embarrassed to say. What's that?
I love you.
I mean, a lot of women sign cards that way, don't they? I love you, and you sign your name to it. Hopefully just first name. We get other ways you might sign a card. What's that? Always yours. Another loving expression, isn't it? How many of you have ever sent your husband a card for a birthday or Christmas or anything else and said, "With my utmost respect," and signed your name to it? Why would you not do that, women? It's not emotional, and that's what he's really looking for, is the heavy emotion, isn't he? It's not emotional. It doesn't sound very loving, does it? With my utmost respect. I'm not suggesting that you send him cards signed that way from now on. But I'm saying it does become important for a wife maybe to write a note to her husband, just say, I want you to know how much I respect you for being the father that you are in this family. And I want to let you know how much I appreciate what you do for our children, how hard you work in order to take care of our family. Whatever it is, if she is letting him know, I've got absolute confidence in you as a husband, that becomes very important for him. You know, let him understand that. Secondly, he needs to know that he's admired. Is life with you going to be filled with admiration? We talked about women wanting compliments. Men are the same way. Men would like to have compliments as well. Compliments and flirting go hand in hand, and men love to be flirted with about different things maybe than the women do. You know, most of the men aren't looking for the woman to come in and say to him, I love that shirt on you. That is so pretty. Not going to make a big difference to me. But he is looking for compliments. And in the Proverbs, it says things like, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul, but harsh words are different. They pierce like a sword. Or in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21, the tongue has power over life and death. The things that you say to him will demonstrate respect to him. He wants to be patted on the back for who he is and for what he does. And if you don't think that's true, I would ask you to explain one phrase for me. You the man. Because I'm telling you, a group of guys get together and one of them looks at the other one and says, "You the man." And they go, "No, you the man." But I'm telling you, whoever walks out of the room having been declared the man holds his head up high and his shoulders back because he is the man. Men want to hear stuff like that. There's a reason that it is so important for people who are employers to understand going into a guy's office and say, "Hey, that job you did on the project last month, I got to tell you, that was a fabulous job." That guy goes home feeling something about himself because he's seeking to accomplish, and somebody has acknowledged that he is both seeking and has done that. Wives need to understand, look for ways to compliment your husband on the things that he has done, his sense of accomplishment. Admire him for that. Show him that you're that way. There's always a danger in men in receiving those things. I'll just give you an example of a certain preacher we'll leave unnamed. Greeting people at the door, and one lady stops and says, "I got to tell you, that was a great sermon. As a matter of fact, I would have to say, you are one of the best preachers I have ever heard, maybe one of the best preachers in the country." So on the drive home, the preacher is just kind of looking smug, sitting in his seat, and got a big smile on his face, and his wife says, "You know, what are you thinking about?" And he finally says, "I was just wondering how many great preachers there probably are in this country." She says, "One less than you think, I assure you." We're not trying to give him a big head, but we want to let him know that he's admired. He wants that. He wants to be admired as a father and as a husband. And so when it talks about the idea of the praise of this person for doing that, as was mentioned a minute ago, to hold my example up to my children is a fabulous thing. But for a man, for your wife to say to other people, "Let me tell you, I appreciate so much what my husband has done for our family. He works so hard." Whatever else it is she's saying about him. A man feels good about that because it is that he is seeking, that kind of success. Look for ways to both express confidence and admiration of who he is and what he does. He's going to look for that. And thirdly, where you knew it had to go, because the third question that men are going to ask is life with you going to be sexual or physically intimate? I mentioned in the college age class last night, remember talking to a young man who just pictured what marriage was going to be like. And in his vision, marriage was going to be like living the life of an adult film star. That's just what he pictured. And I don't mean in the sense of multiple partners or the immorality or all that. He just thought, you know what, once we're married, sexual relationships is only inside of marriage. And once we're married, that's just going to be basically what it is. He just pictured this life of everyday fulfillment. Now, is that fair? Is that good? We also talked about realistic expectations last night in that class, and he needed to grasp some of those as well. But does it matter to a man, the sexual side of marriage? It absolutely matters to a man, and it matters greatly to a man. And as we think about that, God, sometimes there's a tendency, two things happen, I would tell you. One, within structures many times of Christian families, that subject is treated as so taboo that even once a woman gets married, she has a tendency to think in terms of sexual activity being somehow dirty in some sense. Even though it's with her husband, she has a tendency to view it a little bit wrong, not as if it is absolutely a wonderful thing. I'm asking you this. Who created the sexual relationship? God. Who put the sex drive that is in men? God. It can't be that, you know, the all men are dogs kind of mentality. It's just not true. God created man to be a very sexual being, and he is driven that way. That's a God-created thing. And a woman needs to understand that there is very much a side of a man that is the way that you get to his heart, and that he becomes connected. I always tell men, women are stimulated to emotional relationship with their husbands in order to fulfill the sexual. In other words, then they get to the sexual. So the sexual side comes after they've been emotionally stimulated, when they're drawn to. Men are exactly the opposite. It is the physical relationship that allows them to draw to their wives as well. It isn't that men are more sexual than women, that women are more sexual than men. It's just that we approach the subject differently than one another. As we talk, men are extremely visual, more so than women. Would you agree with that? Absolutely. The men's lingerie department is pretty small. There's your first proof. Women are, and I'm not saying women don't appreciate the physical look of their husband. That's not the issue. But not the same way that men do. Men are very visually stimulated. Why? God has created that, has he not? Remember what God said through the psalmist? What did he say? He said, talks about the wife of your youth. He says, "Let her breasts satisfy you at all times." That's God speaking. You know, you go through the book of Song of Solomon sometime. You think that God's not sexual. Read the book of Song of Solomon. I'm telling you, God says that he created the female beauty for man to admire and for him to be stimulated by it. He made women look the way they did because it does have the effect on men that it does. That's okay. That's not necessarily a bad thing. In Proverbs chapter 5:19, and I said Psalms, but 5:19, it says, "As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times." Every man understands the connotation of the statement about David. When David went up on the roof, it said, "And David saw a woman bathing." Every man understands the connotation of that statement. Do you not? And he gazed upon her, and I'm telling you, every man understands the nature of what it's saying. If you see a woman who does not have her clothes on, it is going to automatically create a stimulus. Now, what the man does with it, you can either do like David, and we'll talk about that in the next session, or you can make a better choice than David did. But the stimulus is there because God made it to be there. And men are asking, is life with you going to be sexual? He's very visual. Let me give you a scenario. Man comes into the room. It doesn't matter when it is. It could be Sunday morning or any other time. But he comes into the bathroom. The wife happens to step out of the shower. She's got no clothes on. She's drying off. The man looks at her, immediately is visually stimulated by his wife, and he's thinking, hey, we've still got another 45 minutes before we have to leave the house. I'm just saying that he's stimulated in a different way. She comes in. He steps out of the shower, and she's thinking, please stand on the bath mat. I just cleaned the floor. I don't want to mop again. No, I understand. That's a great exaggeration, but we're different. We are visually stimulated, and women need to understand that. And so you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7, and here's what it says about this relationship. It's his need. It is your privilege. One of the great things is the concept of possession or ownership in marriage. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, it says, a man shall leave his father and mother, shall cleave to his wife. That's two different laws there. But then he says, and the two shall become one flesh. That's a possession, a law of possession. And so in Corinthians, what does he say? He said, wives, your body does not belong to you in marriage. It belongs to him. Husbands, your body does not belong to you in marriage. It belongs to her. He's saying we have to understand the law of possession. That's what God creates in this one flesh. And he understands the dynamic that is created in that fleshly union. And even though I think Genesis 2:24 is more than just about the sexual union, I think that is a basis of that. Paul also told Christians in the New Testament, he said, if you join yourself to a harlot, you what? You become one with the harlot. It has nothing to do with marriage. The oneness has nothing to do with marriage. It is stimulated. God has created the two that when they come together in sexual union, it creates a bond and a dynamic between the two that is difficult to break in any other way. And so that's created whether I happen to choose somebody that is my wife or not my wife. God has created sex to create that union, and it is, in fact, a continual stimulus. It's interesting to do a study on what the brain does during sexual intimacy. It's interesting because the brain secretes different hormones and does different things. Some of those create it's almost like an addiction. The body adjusts and understands the pleasure nature of that and wants to be involved in that again. God has created that because that creates a great release, I think, for men as well. And sometimes women don't understand. I can help him feel respected. I will tell you, Satan will do everything he can to get couples into bed before they get married. Would you agree with that? He'll do everything he can to get couples to have illicit relations before they get married. He'll do everything he can to kick couples out of bed once they get married. It is, every time, it is in the top three sources of marital conflict. Every time. Sex, children, money. Those are the top three every time they take a survey on those things. Out of the top five, those are the top three. The other two rotate around, and those top three change order, but they're always in the top three. It is a huge part of marriage. It is a microcosm of the marriage. And so is sex man's greatest need? No. Any more than conversation is a woman's greatest need. Conversation is indicative of her need to be loved and connected. Sex is indicative of his need to be respected. Men feel disrespected when the sexual relationship inside of marriage is not what God intends that it be, and what he is hoping and looking for is the fulfillment of that need. Let me give you a couple things to think about in the idea of what happens when you neglect, how a man feels about that. Here's some quotes from some men that are different, I think, than most women would perceive them to be. It talks about is critical to his feeling desired. You know, imagine, wives, if your husband went a year and never said, I love you. Would you have trouble with that? I mean, would that be difficult? It would be for most women. Men say these kinds of things. He says, I wish that my wife understood that making a priority of meeting my intimacy needs is the loudest and clearest way she can say you're more important to me than anything else in the world. Most women don't think men are necessarily thinking like that, but here's a guy who's saying, if she would understand, meeting these needs is how she shows to me how important I am to her. It means something to him. And it's not just the carrying out of the physical intimacy. He wants to be emotionally involved in that. He says it's a form of communication that speaks more forcefully with less room for misinterpretation than any other. He wants to be desired. It demonstrates respect to him. And even though a wife may not think that rejecting him carries a different message, he says she doesn't understand how even her occasional dismissals make me feel less desirable. I can't resist her. I wish that I too were irresistible. She says I am, but her ability to say no, see what he's saying? Saying she says I'm irresistible to her, but he says that's hard to believe because she can so easily say no in that relationship. I would tell you the golden rule in the sense of how much do you want to be loved and how do you want that demonstrated, wives? Your husband wants to be respected in the same way, and it demonstrates itself to him in several different ways. Never, ever. You want to disrespect your husband in this realm more than any other? Never, ever use the sexual relationship as a bargaining chip of any type. He will feel more disrespect. I'm not saying he won't still be involved in the relationship. He will. He will still be involved in the intimacy, but you want to make him feel disrespected. Make him feel like he somehow has to earn the right to be physically intimate with his wife. He is driven by God for this to be a fulfillment of his life. And as quickly as men need to understand wives and their need for love and their need for that compassion and cherishing, wives need to understand that men are very sexual and God created us that way. And it's a demand that they need to be involved in fulfilling and privileged to do so as the husband. There's no greater thing that God has given me by way of privilege than being able to serve him. You ever think about that with God? I mean, is it not just an honor that God even allows me to come to him and talk to him and serve him, the creator of the whole universe? And he says, Mark, I want to have a relationship with you. I feel honored even to be able to do anything for him. Husbands and wives need to be that way. God has given you a spouse. It is a privilege and an honor to be able to serve them in whatever way God has deemed is best to serve them. We need to strive to accomplish that.